Good morning. Welcome to Hypera Pharma's conference call to discuss its first quarter 2020 results. We have with us today Mr. Breno Oliveira, CEO, and Mr. Adalmario Couto, CFO. We'd like to inform you that this event is being recorded. During the company's presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Then, we will begin a questions and answers session for investors and analysts only, when further instructions will be given. If you require any assistance during the call, please dial star zero to reach the operator. We'd like to inform you that questions may only be asked by phone. If you are connected through the webcast, you should email your questions directly to the investor relations team at ri@hypera.com.br. Today's live webcast may be accessed through the company's investor relations website, which is ipeta.com.br/IR. We would like to inform you that statements made during this conference call may constitute forward-looking statements. These statements are subject to risks, known and unknown, as well as uncertainties that could cause the company's actual results to differ materially from those set in the forward-looking statements. We would now like to turn the floor over to Mr. Breno Oliveira, who will begin the company's presentation. The floor is yours, sir. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our results call for the first quarter of 2020. I'd like to start by talking about our independent committee. In the previous call, we said that we were at the final stage of their work, and we were expected to finish by April. Now, due to the current situation, that schedule will be slightly delayed, and now we're expecting them to finish in May. We will provide communications to the market as soon as it is concluded. Now, let me talk about our operational performance on slide three. In the first quarter of 2020, our sellout went up by 11%, reaching two-digit growth for the fourth quarter in a row. This was mainly due to increased demand, especially in consumer health, during the second and third weeks of March. This was a consequence of consumers rushing to buy medication after the COVID-19 pandemic started. The main categories benefited by this were flu medication, painkillers, and vitamins. In branded prescription products, the highlights for this quarter were Rinosoro, Prednisone, Colflex, Ofolato, and especially Addera, due to the recent news about studies showing the importance of vitamin D to regulate the immune system and reduce respiratory infections. On the other hand, we see that some important categories, such as dermatology and pediatrics, have already felt a negative impact from the reduction in doctor consultations due to the COVID-19 pandemic. This pressured the growth in demand for prescription products this quarter. We're monitoring how the market behaves on the short term closely. During the last week of March, early April, we saw that our excellent performance was reversed, but now it seems to be gradually growing over the last few weeks. In the first quarter of 2020, the company recorded a net revenue of 815 million, with a recovery of the gross margins to 67% and the EBITDA margin to 31% this quarter, which is in line with what we expected for the rest of the year. The COVID-19 pandemic brought additional challenges for the daily operations of Brazilian companies in all different industries throughout the quarter, and for Hypera, it was not different. I'd just like to mention the main measures we took recently on slide four. Our main focus has been to take care of our employees. We have adopted home office with 100% of our administrative worker, And we've placed all employees who are in the risk group in home office. They will come back gradually from May with additional safety measures. And in the case of doctors' visits, we're now using a tool for virtual visits for those doctors who have still not gone back to their clinics. We would like to reinforce our corporate health team, and we're offering remote medical services to all our employees and their family members. We're also helping communities where we are. We donated to NGOs in the state of Goiás. We've donated 20 respirators to the city of Anápolis, the city where most of our employees are. We've also donated medication, food, and hand sanitizer. And we started a partnership between the Benegripe Grant and the Rappi Delivery Service to deliver medication with free shipping in São Paulo and Rio de Janeiro. It's also very important to protect our plant and our innovation center. We're adopting several different prevention measures, such as taking people's temperature when they come into the plant and installing distancing in hires of higher flow in areas of higher flow, such as the entrance and their cafeteria. We also have an action plan if there are any COVID-19 cases in our facilities. We've also anticipated the purchase orders for active ingredients imported from China and India from February, and we're not expecting any shortages. We took these measures because, as a pharmaceutical company, we have the obligation of ensuring health and the supply of medication to the Brazilian population. But we always have to keep in mind that all our teams and communities need to also be protected. Besides these initiatives, we're also trying to strengthen our short-term liquidity, which is already robust. And this is done preventively due to the uncertainties we have in the current market. We have a credit line of around 900 million for 2020 and 2021. We've also put out 2.5 billion BRL in long-term debentures with a pre-negotiated cost of CDI plus 1.5% a year to pay for the acquisition of the Takeda portfolio, which should be due at the fourth quarter of 2020. With that, we have a pro forma cash position of approximately 5 billion BRL, more than enough to pay for our acquisitions such as Takeda after the Brazilian authorities approve it. We'd also like to remind you that in March we negotiated a sales of the LATAM installment ex-Brazil of our portfolio for Takeda to be sold at $161 million. And with that, we will focus exclusively on the Brazilian market where we see many growth opportunities. With the derivative operations carried out in March and April, we reduced our exposure to under $400, or under 50% of the original exposure. Before I let Adalmario speak, I'd just like to quickly talk about innovation, which is shown here on our presentation. Our total R&D investments, including what was capitalized with intangible assets, reached 7.2% of our net revenue, reinforcing our commitment to innovation and sustainable investments, including it during this difficult moment of the pandemic. In this quarter, we acquired the Glenmark Dermatology portfolio, which is very important and will reinforce our dermatology portfolio. And it will reinforce Mantecorp Skincare's position with dermatologists. We also extended a number of brands and also the new Artrotop anti-inflammatory ointment and Centrotab's Beauty, a new product which extends the Centrotab's line. Now I'd like to pass the floor to Adalmario, who will talk about this quarter's results.
Thank you, Breno. Good morning, everyone. I'm going to start with our main highlights on slide six. Net revenue for the first quarter of 2020 was 815 million BRL, more than double year-on-year. I know it's not a good basis for comparison given the drop in sales in prescription product and consumer health in the first quarter of 2019.
The goal then was to reduce the inventory of those products for clients at the time. Gross margin was below sell-out sales. As Breno said, it was very prevalent in the 2 weeks of mid-March. We didn't have any time to react so that we could recompose our inventory during that time. We also saw a lower level of the demand in the last quarter because of the impact of the pandemic, and this was also associated to an indefinition on price readjustments by CMED, which was delayed this year for over 60 days. I'd also like to highlight that from this quarter on, sell-in growth should be close to sell-out, since we are operating in the new commercial model with smaller inventories of our products in our clients since the second quarter of 2019. In the second quarter of 2020, sell-in should be higher than sell-out to recompose our clients' inventory after the above-average demand in the month of March. Gross profits amounted to 543 million BRL, and our gross margin was nearly 67%, almost 7% higher than the fourth quarter of 2019. Some factors contributed to that increase, such as reducing idleness in our plants and the increase in our average price, reducing commercial discounts, and that offsets the negative impact of the exchange rate. The average exchange rate was around 4 BRL versus 3.68% in the, excuse me, 3.68 BRL in the first quarter of 2019. So it was an increase of around 10%. Here I have to remind you of our policy to hedge 100% of our purchase orders for imported inputs. Earlier this year, we also had an additional hedging using our purchasing forecast for 2020. So the impact of the foreign exchange on gross margins should be minimized for 2020. Factors that impacted our gross margins negatively in this quarter were still high volumes of returns and disposals, which were above what we expected but should be normal for the remainder of the year. The better gross margin contributed in helping our EBITDA margin to go above 30%. This was basically due to higher discipline in managing expenses in the first quarter because of the COVID-19 pandemic. I'll give some more color on that. This quarter, we saw a one-off reduction of promotional activities in points of sale due to restricted circulation and social distancing in many states at the end of March, which led to a reduction of about 25% in promotional discounts in the last quarter. Regarding commercial expenses, they were at the same levels we saw in 2019, but the R&D team was increased, and this was offset by the PLR provision being returned, and also a higher activation of expenses related to R&D projects. Marketing expenses were 23 million BRL higher than last year, given the increase in medical visitation in June last year and the one-off increase in the number of free samples during the last quarter. A part of this growth was offset by a better negotiation with some offline media packages and also a reduction in the number of ads because of COVID-19. Administrative expenses were slightly lower than last year, and we had a positive result of 35 million BRL in other expenses, accounting tax credits we received during the last quarter. Our financial results were positive because of the company's net cash position and also the P&L from the hedge to reduce the exchange exposure related to paying the Takeda portfolio acquisition. We also had a positive contribution from interest, excuse me, income tax, which can be explained by an increase in the capital returns for shareholders, which maximizes the tax benefit.
The total amount declared this quarter was 185 million BRL, or about 29 cents per share, 15% higher than what we saw in the first quarter of 2019, and this is the fourth consecutive year in which capital returns were higher for shareholders. We expect for that to continue and, if possible, to do it via interest on own capital, which shows our confidence that we have in our own cash generation now and in the future. Now let me talk about cash flow on slide 7. Our operational cash flow was 107 million BRL in the first quarter of 2020. It was more than necessary to support our CapEx investments and intangible investments, which are mainly in pipeline projects. They are all leveraged. As Breno commented, our investments in R&D went up by 11% this quarter, reaching a total of 58 million BRL between what was spent and activated. With that, we had a free cash generation of 45 million BRL. As Breno already said, to increase our liquidity position, we had already reinforced the company's liquidity with nearly 600 million BRL of additional credit until the end of March. So all of this, along with the additional 300 million BRL and the release of nearly 2.5 billion BRL, prove how we can access the capital market if necessary, and also how we can ensure the lowest available spread levels in the market. Maintaining the robustness of our spreadsheet will still be our priority, especially given the current situation. We also want to use the strength of it to ensure sustainable growth long term. With that, our free cash position at the end of the quarter was 280 million BRL after paying interest on our own capital regarding 2019. I will now turn back over to Breno for his final remarks. Thank you, Adalmario. Just as in all past crises, this one will not be different and will also generate opportunities. We're working to come out of it stronger. We hope to collect the fruits of the recent investments we made in some fronts, such as creating last year a trade marketing structure focused on e-commerce for our main clients. Its sales have more than doubled in the last weeks. In early 2019, we created a virtual medical system, which allowed us to plug this platform quickly to nearly 1,000 medical reps we have out in the field so that they could work again in a hybrid model between personal and online visitation, which should be more common from now on, and being closer to startups in the health tech industry with our programs, Hypera Hub and Hypera Ventures, identifying investment opportunities and partnerships that we may have with segments that can have exponential growth in the short and medium term. So despite this difficult moment, the long-term growth foundations for the market will continue to be intact, especially given the aging of our population, which increases the consumption of medications. Concluding the transformational acquisitions of Buscopan and the Takeda portfolio will make Hypera Pharma the biggest Brazilian pharma company, an absolute leader in consumer health. And along with our leading brands, a robust go-to-market platform, our liquidity, and our strong investment capacity put us in a position as the best prepared company to take the growth opportunities present in the Brazilian pharma industry. Thank you, and I'd now like to move on to the questions and answer session. Thank you. We'll now begin the questions and answer session. To ask a question, please dial star one. The first question comes from Mr. Robert Ford from Bank of America. Good morning. I hope you're all safe and well. I have three questions, please. First, can you tell
us a bit about the current operational trends in terms of mix and competition, please? Second, what are your plans for your sales team to go back to work? And how are you considering technology in order to do that? Finally, can you tell us about your operational coverage and your gross margins expectations for the rest of the year, please? Hi, Bob. Good morning. Thank you for your questions. I hope you and your family are also safe. So let me answer your first and your second questions, and Adalmario will answer the third. Regarding current trends, we saw a strong and fast movement in mid-March, in terms of demand. We saw a great variation of higher demand in different products. We mentioned some categories that did very well, such as flu medication, vitamins, vitamin D specifically for us. They all did very well, but on the other hand, we saw some categories, especially for acute treatments, which depend on medical consultations, the pediatric line, for example. As you know, children are not going to school, so they're not getting sick, and that impacts our performance. So we saw that performance changed significantly in the different categories we work in. April started slowly. We saw a downward trend, but over time, week by week, the performance ended up improving. So we believe that the market should come close to zero growth in April. But it is a gradual positive trend. In terms of competition, we see that there are some smaller players who were very aggressive in the past that are no longer so commercially aggressive. As you know, there's the effect of the exchange rate on our margins, but this also affects our competitors. Everyone ends up being affected. Everyone depends on the same things coming from abroad. And the credit crisis for the smaller players ends up impacting them more in terms of credit availability. So to answer your second question about going back to business as usual, our entire field team first is working from home. In the case of medical visits, they are now doing online visitations, and some weeks later, they were all given a collective vacation. And now we're seeing that they're slowly going back to the field. The merchandise team, the reps, which go back to big chains, just recently came back last week. Of course, they're taking all necessary precautions, wearing gloves, masks. They also have flexible working hours to avoid peak hours. And the medical visitation teams are, in fact, going back to work today. They're starting to use a new tool so that they can visit physicians remotely. So we believe that these new technologies are here to stay. There should be a great change in how they behave and this relationship between reps and doctors, but also between doctors and patients. We see that telemedicine will be more and more common from now on. These are changes, as in many other industries, which are coming before a trend that was going to happen gradually. And this is all taking place very fast in a matter of weeks. Many technologies are being adopted, changing the way in which reps relate to doctors and doctors with their patients. Well, I hope I've answered your first two questions, Bob. If so, I'll let Adol Mario answer your third questions. Excuse me, your third question about margin. Hi, Bob. Good morning. We do not have a formal guidance for gross margins, but given this challenging scenario, since the BRL is weaker, we think that the gross margins this year will be closer to what we had in this first quarter. We hope to have a more positive effect of our product mix, even with new launches, both over the counter and prescription. And also, we expect to see a positive effect from some categories in our portfolio, which have been performing well right now, such as vitamin D, which is Addera. This is a product that has higher margins than the company's average gross margins. And we saw an expressive increase in its demand because of the awareness that came up around vitamin D. This was a segment that had been on the downs in the past, but then from March we had a re-uptake in demand. And Addera, since it leads the segment, ended up gaining even more market share. So, because of that and some other specific categories in our portfolio, we see that gross margins should be around 67% or that level. For the rest of the year. Just to add something, in our budget, in our plans, we are getting prepared for an exchange rate of 5 BRL per dollar. So we're seeing how that would impact our average cost over the year. Our margin forecast, which Adalmario mentioned, is considering this scenario. Now we're going to see how things behave in the next weeks and months, and then based on our competition and how they behave, we'll see if we need to have any additional price adjustment to offset a higher exchange rate. Thank you very much. The next question comes from Joseph Giordano from JP Morgan. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Breno and Adalmario. Thank you for taking my question. I actually have three. The first one is just to clarify something regarding your hedging. Breno mentioned that this 17% budget for gross margins is working with an exchange rate of around 5 BRL. So I'd just like to know if a hedge, when we talk about the Takeda acquisition and the operational hedge, are at the same FX level. A second point, which is very important in the COVID context, is trying to understand how this sellout was doing until mid-March. We finished the quarter at 11%, so I'd just like to separate what's the underlying trend in the sellout, just to try to extrapolate what the second quarter would be like given your prescription mix. So if you could tell us what percentage of products really do require a prescription. Finally, if you can talk about price increases, which were postponed to June, that increase of 4.1, 4.2%, I'd just like to understand if there are any chances of seeing a incremental adjustment to that price hike, given the exchange rate volatility since then has been so significant. Thank you. So I'll take your first question regarding hedging. Since we announced the acquisition of Takeda, we've been hedging, reducing our exchange exposure. We announced it at 4.5 BRL. And then we carried out a part of the hedge, and then we hedged some more over the next days. Now, the average cost, that is, the rate we're using for hedging, is around 5.16 BRL on average, which is about 240 million BRL that we hedged. Of course, we're watching the exchange rate closely, and whenever we have an opportunity, whenever it's closer to 5, we can increase this hedge. The idea is to continue this strategy for the next days to reduce our exposure even more. Considering purchasing hedge, we've always done it once we place an order. So from the moment we place an order until we pay, historically we've always hedged like that. What we did differently this year was actually to have an additional hedge with a purchase forecast for what we had for the rest of the year. So the first 2 weeks of January, we already hedged most of what we had forecasted until June at around 4.1 BRL, which is around the level we were earlier this year. With that purchasing hedge plus the additional hedge we set apart, we see that this higher exchange rate will create an impact on our cost between September and October this year. And then obviously we're going to monitor things to see if we have an opportunity to increase that hedge even more. So, Joe, considering your other questions, your second question was the percentage of prescription in our portfolio. Was that it? Yes, the pre-COVID sellout, so we can understand what your underlying trend was. And secondly, how much of it was from prescription medication. I had also asked about price increases. Right, sellout before the COVID crisis had sped up, but it was also not a very big difference. It was high single digit for the first 2 months of the year. What happened in March was a variation of the demand, as I was saying. In some categories, growth went down significantly, such as cosmetics. The market practically did not grow in the first quarter, and that for us has a higher weight than the market average. Prescription as a whole represents about 40% of our portfolio. So we have different effects within the category of prescription medication. We had a high impact, for example, on acute use medication. So, orthopedic products, for example, as people are exercising less, they're also getting less injured in home. So we have fewer visits to orthopedists and fewer painkiller prescriptions. So that's it. There was an increase in the trend, and as Adomario said, we didn't have the capacity to react and sell it so quickly. As you know, our revenue is recorded by the delivery of goods. So all of this cycle between the increase and sellout, having more orders from clients and delivering products has not been recorded yet for the second quarter, but we do expect to see that still in the second quarter. Regarding price increases, there are discussions among pharma associations and the government. There are some discussions on how to negotiate an increase in prices. But I do believe that we should be working with the expected increase, which we had already mentioned. We're not expecting to see an even higher one. But as a reminder, for us, that impact is only in approximately 16 to 18% of our portfolio. Because over the counter, as you know, from March, we already had some categories that had their prices set, and from March, all of the over-the-counter portfolio will not change. As for generic and similar products, we have a very high level of discounts. So even if prices don't go any higher than we had announced, the industry does have enough room to work with discounts. So what really affects us is prescription products, which are already close to our price limits in the list of prices, and they represent around 17% of our portfolio. Great, thank you, Breno and Adel Mario. Have a good day. The next question comes from Gustavo Oliveira from UBS. Good morning, Breno and Adel Mario. So, considering that in the first quarter sales were a bit below our expectations from the consensus, I'd just like to understand what you're thinking about the guidance you had already published. Do you think that guidance will be maintained? And also, I'd like to understand along the same lines that you said that in the market there was a slight growth. So, what's the expected market growth in your perception? Hi, Gustavo. So these sales, despite being smaller in sell-in than what we expected, are not so different from what we already had in our plans. If we take the mid-range, if we take sales in the first quarter versus the guidance for the year, we reached about 19% of the guidance's mid-range. Sell-out represents about 20% of the year for the first quarter. So, as a reminder, our portfolio is very strong during the winter. So, especially for the second and third quarter, we have flu medication, we have an antihistamine portfolio, Rinosoro, Predzim. All of these products have a higher demand during winter. So, sellout for the first quarter is a bit higher than the 19% we saw in our goal for the year, which should be around 20, 21%, but it doesn't reach the 25%. So, it's less than one quarter of our yearly sellout. In other words, we are comfortable with these numbers. They are different, but not too different from what we imagined. So there was a demand at the end of the quarter, so we didn't manage to replenish the stocks because deliveries were slower. But we see this happening in the first few weeks of April. I see. And what about your expectation for the market growth? You said that in the first quarter the market itself was flat, but you had an increased sellout of 11%, so you gained in share. How do you imagine this is going to continue for the rest of the year? It's hard to say for the year. Our expectations was to have high single-digit growth. By talking to clients, we see that the tendency for April, for many of our clients and the preliminary data we have from other preliminary guides is also pointing to a weaker growth in April, which offsets the stronger growth we had in March. It's hard to say. You asked about our guidance, and we don't see any reason right now to change it at all. I think it's too soon. I don't think there's going to be a huge variation in the demand from the market average. Like I said, we had some drastic changes in some categories, but for the market average, we don't see any reason to have a variation regarding our original projections. So, with that being said, I believe the market will continue this high single-digit trend for for the entire year. One last question, if I may. You mentioned an investigation at the beginning, but that was exactly when I came in, so I'm not sure what you said. I think it was delayed, but if you could tell us a bit more about why it was delayed. What I said was that originally we had expected for the investigation to finish in mid-April. So we would have the results presented to our governance departments and our board, but because of the pandemic, at first we had to postpone some of the meetings. But we believe this process will conclude now in May. So there was a slight delay of about 1 month in this process. So that's in the company, right? I believe you're talking to the regulators. Are the conversations still normal? I don't have any details that I can share. The impact that we have is internal to the company. Great, that's great, Breno. Thank you. The next question comes from Gustavo Mieli from Itaú BBA. Good morning, Breno and Adalmario. Thank you for your presentation. I hope you're all doing well. I actually have two questions. The first is about your dermatology portfolio, which was acquired last year from Glenmark. Is there anything you can share with us about how much weight it has in your sellout? Do you expect these nine brands to grow? Is it going to be very different from the consolidated growth that you have? If you could give us some more details about these brands specifically, I would appreciate it. My second point, I'd just like you to talk a bit more about the partnership you had with Rappi to deliver Benegrip. How much benefit do you expect to get from that partnership, and do you also expect to extend it to other kinds of medication according to the different market opportunities you see? That's all. Thank you. So let me take your first question, and then Breno will answer the second one. From the strategical point of view, the acquisition is basically bringing a lot of synergy to our current portfolio, which is a portfolio still focused on cosmetics. Today, Mantecorp Skincare, as a brand, is a leader in the Brazilian market. Of course, we have L'Oréal, which has several brands and works in four different brands, but as a single brand, we are already market leaders. But there's still a gap in what we call medication prescribed by a dermatologist. So it's very complementary to our portfolio. It's a brand portfolio, many of which were recently launched, so they contribute to our sales at a low level for now, but we believe that in our hands, from the moment in which we can expand our promotional activities with our representatives, we're going to be able to generate significant growth throughout the first and second year when these activities begin. Just to give you an idea, this portfolio was promoted by a team with fewer than 30 representatives, and now we have over 150 representatives visiting dermatologists. So there's a great potential, but this will be seen in the future. Right now, we only will have marginal contributions. As to the agreement or the partnership we had with Rappi, we're seeing this from the social point of view. And it's not exclusive to Benegrip, just to make it clear. Any medication purchased through the Rappi app in these two cities, São Paulo and Rio, have free shipping which is being offered by Rappian ourselves. So it's a social activity to help by using the Benegrippi brand to sponsor it instead of Ipera, which is not a brand name that consumers know very well. So it's more of a long-term marketing activity with a social outlook. We don't expect to have relevant sales gains short-term stemming from this activity. So we're also looking at several other initiatives, sponsorships, sponsoring, you know, live shows that many artists are giving online. We've also sponsored with brands like Ingovi and Benegrippi and other donations we mentioned in the beginning. For example, we had a donation to an NGO in the state of Goiás, where we donated respirators to the city of Anápolis, 20 respirators. We also donated medication, Addera, and others. So there are several activities we are conducting to help the communities where we are. Thank you, that was very clear. If I may, I have a third question. I had to leave the call for a few minutes, so I'm not sure if you've already mentioned anything about this, and I apologize if I'm repeating anything. Did you, in April, see any replenishment to offset that mismatch in sellout and sell-in in March for consumer health? Did you notice anything in April, or will it be left more towards May? Thank you. Yes, we have seen it. We received orders from clients, and as I said, our revenue is based on products being delivered. So there was a cutoff point in what was delivered until March 31st. But these orders to replenish products have already been taking place, and we saw some of that effect in April. So this mismatch should be reversed by the second quarter. Thank you, that was very clear. Thank you. The next question comes from Fred Mendes from Bradesco. Good morning, everyone. I have two questions. First, I'd like to refer back to what Gustavo mentioned. In terms of revenue, it was a bit below what I had expected. Of course, there were doctor visitations, but I'd just like to understand if there were any impacts from the drought in Anápolis. If I'm not mistaken, some of the revenue was going to be postponed to this quarter. I'm not sure if it had any positive or negative impacts in the results you showed. So that's my first question. Secondly, in renegotiating with clients, I'd just like to understand what that's like. I know that you deal with major players, so in theory, they have a better cash position, but I'd just like to know if we are seeing that these players are trying to be more aggressive in renegotiating prices. Thank you. So let me answer your second question with regard to renegotiating with clients. We did not see any requests for that, to renegotiate terms. We're basically performing very well, especially in comparison with other industries. Our doors are still open. You don't see any major impact in our clients' results. So there has been no need to renegotiate anything. Of course, in this scenario, we have to get ready for a possible stress in the future. We reviewed our credit limits. We reviewed our credit limits for some clients. But right now, we didn't see any changes in the default levels. Customers have also not tried to postpone payments. So, and prices have not been renegotiated because we still have demand. And sorry, what was your first question? Can you repeat it, please? Right, I'd just like to understand your revenue. I know Gustavo mentioned it, but Did you suffer any impact from the drought in Annapolis? We saw that in previous quarters, and you said that some of it would be absorbed in this quarter before, so I'd just like to know if you did see any impact this quarter. I think there was an impact. We said in the fourth quarter earnings call that because of that drought issue there, we had much lower inventories at the end of the fourth quarter than we would like. And we saw that the replenishment would take place in the first and second quarters of 2020. So we still see that some of these sales will be different because they were lost in the fourth quarter, but they will be recovered in the second. So in the second quarter, because of it, and because of a more concentrated demand at the end of the quarter, we see that our clients' inventory levels are a bit lower than what we would like or what we expected. But that will change now in the second quarter. Great. Thank you, Breno. The next question comes from Irma Sgarz from Goldman Sachs. Good morning. Thank you for taking my question. Most of my questions have already been answered, but I'd just like to ask a follow-up question about the timeline for launching new products. Do you see any delays impacting this year or maybe next year? And my second question is about your marketing activity mix, and if you could contain some of the expenses right now for the weaker demand. How do you see the balance between the cuts you made to your expenses through your sales force and marketing, and how is it being redirected towards new activities? Do you see that deleverage impacting your margins? That was my question. Thank you very much. Good morning, Irma. Let me answer your first question. Regarding the launch timeline, we have a robust pipeline right now. We have around 100 launches expected for this year, but most of them are concentrated in the second half of the year. So for now, we don't see an impact. We're in the pre-launch phase, basically producing what needs to be produced. Inputs are coming in. We're doing training, and for now, the timeline is maintained normally. Obviously, we're monitoring the situation from closely, but as Breno mentioned, our medical visitation team, merchandising, store visits should resume this week. We're still using a new tool, which actually we had already been testing throughout last year to visit doctors, and obviously the launches we have now in the second quarter will be using this platform. The idea is to use a platform for launches and also to communicate with the market the new products that to be launched this quarter. So the timeline will depend on the situation and how soon we can go back to normal. Our segment has not been so impacted because, pharmacies are still open. But we had some categories, especially specialist physicians, where we need to be close to them to launch products well. So we're monitoring how that's going, and we'll see how the situation does in the second semester. As to your other questions, Irma, about cutting costs, we have to highlight that we're not reducing investments. We're not reducing our investment plan. Obviously, we had a simulation for the worst-case scenario. We had already mapped that if we had to cut costs, where we would do it. This is very well mapped to preserve our cash. But so far, we haven't seen this market movement taking place. Sales are still coming in, competitors are also investing, but what we did see was changes in some areas. For example, medical visitation, reps were on vacation, doctors also had their clinics closed, so the distribution of free samples, which is a relevant part of the cost, was reduced. Expenses with travel is also at zero in the company. And this will probably continue in the future. We saw what we can do, how we can meet via Zoom or other online tools, so the need for travel will be reduced from now on. Regarding marketing, we had that issue of soccer championship games changing since we sponsor soccer teams. But we've been talking to global and other broadcasters to get a different time slot for them. The idea is not to reduce our investment in media, quite contrary. Now, we've been taking this opportunity in April, since people are staying home and viewership is going up, to accelerate it. So, probably in the second half of the year, we're going to have a higher investment in media, but this is all within our plan. For the year, we didn't change anything in terms of cutting costs. We basically reallocated our expenses in different scenarios. So, for example, we had an investment plan for e-commerce, trade marketing for the e-commerce platforms. We anticipated a good part of these investments that were planned for the year for now, for April and May, which is when people are shopping online more. So basically, we did that kind of movement, but our investments in marketing will continue to generate demand, focusing on sellout and market share gains, which is our long-term goal. Great, thank you. The next question comes from Tobias Stindling from Citibank. Good afternoon, I hope you're all well. A quick question. You mentioned Adera. Adera represented, if I'm not mistaken, 10% of your sales in the past. Then we had that change in protocol, a difficult moment in the past, but now with this improvement, with COVID-19, since it's now being prescribed or referred to, what should we expect from this category? Today, it represents for the year, of course, on the short term it's higher, but for the year, about 6% of our total portfolio, give or take. I'm looking here at sellout. This was the data I have. But it had a reversal, right? It was dropping, it dropped 15, 20%, and now it's contributing again positively to the portfolio. But I still think it's early, Tobias, to know if that's a long-term trend. We have been demonstrating more and more a correlation to COVID-19. And that can be a good thing to revert that negative trend we had seen in the vitamin D market over the last year. But on the short term, we did see a very positive impact. Thank you. Now, thinking at a higher level, in your budget this year, it was going down, right, because of the measures you had introduced last year. Or did you think the business was already flat or stable before COVID-19, of course? Just to think about your base case. Are you talking about Adera specifically? Yes, I am. I know that it was going down, and you introduced a number of measures to change that trend, but I don't know exactly how it was doing. So, without that outside factor, do you think it was going to continue going down?
No, it was positive, but marginally so, low single digit. But considering launches, line extensions, the brand as a whole was growing according to our low single digit plans, considering the new launches already. Great. One final question. Vitamins are still a low share for you, right? How much do they represent now as a ballpark figure? Because you know we have strong brands to explore this segment. Basically, we relaunched the Vitasay brand last year, and we also launched CentroTabs, which is what we call a smart choice. It's more directed towards independent and medium-sized chains. So we still have a small share, but from mid-March and to April, we saw a strong demand. It's basically one of the few vitamins that have a strong media presence on TV with Vitasay. And we also have a presence, a strong distribution with CentroTabs. And we're taking part in that overall market growth in this specific category. So between Addera, Vitasay, and CentroTabs, it represents around 7 to 8% of our portfolio. Great, thank you. This concludes the Q&A session. Mr. Breno Oliveira will be making his final remarks. Thank you for listening to our call. As usual, everyone, especially the investor relations team, will be open to answer any questions you may have. Thank you and have a good day. This concludes Hypera's conference call. We'd like to thank you for listening and have a nice day.